Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Thank you, Nina. I think Cathy quite eloquently there showed the rhetoric and reality about what is actually happening. I'm going to now just talk about and demonstrate the history and the rhetoric and reality in the public health service agenda and think about what we as midwives can do to address inequalities in health. We know that midwifery has its origins in public health and social welfare. In the United Kingdom, historical writings show it was social reformers and suffragettes with some far-looking medical practitioners who actually lobbied hard for the first Midwifery Act in 1902. We still see midwives lobbying hard and working extremely hard to provide equal care to women, both in a hospital and community setting. Public health has now become a core part of our midwifery practice, though it's not always recognised. While there's always been a strong public health component to maternity care in the UK, this has not always been reflected in health and social policy. Public health is an integral part of our work, whether we practice in a community or a hospital setting. As midwives, we meet women from a wide range of backgrounds at different stages in her pregnancy. We offer support and advice on issues from diet during the antenatal period to postnatal exercises. It was in 1957 that the RCM General Secretary then, Audrey Wood, said, "Fundamentally, public health means the health of all people in the community, and the health of the family, both physical and mental, depends on the parents, primarily the mother." This is delivered by midwives in two main ways that we know, through health education and the nursing care of mother and baby. One very interesting example cited by Audrey in 1961 was, quote, "In England recently, it was discovered that perfectly normal, healthy babies can die because of low room temperatures, which allow them to become thoroughly chilled. The midwife can prevent this from happening by her skilled care of the mother and baby, particularly in health education and in the establishment of breastfeeding. It's also clear that it's not only the skills that we have as midwives. It's also essential, that relationship between midwives, the woman and her family. It's clear in terms of policies that public health issues which affect women and their families have changed little since the start of the National Health Service, and that these are linked to the social determinants of health. Here's a definition of the social determinants of health. Social determinants of health are the economic and social conditions that influence the health of individuals, communities as a whole. They are about the quantity and quality of a variety of sources that a society makes to its members. We know that these are linked to certain areas too. They are linked to income, employment and working conditions, housing, education and nutrition. And these factors are very real, if not more real today, to the women and families that we care for. The National Health Service was started on the 5th of July 1948. This, as we know, was the first time in the history that health services became available to all women and their families, regardless of income. It was 30 years after the establishment of the National Health Service in the United Kingdom when it was highlighted that even though healthcare was now available to all, there were differences. There were differences in the health between those that were rich and those that were poor, and that having the free health service we had and started did not solve problems in mortality or morbidity. These differences between rich and poor then caused the government great concern, so much concern they commissioned an inquiry, which culminated in the landmark Black Report. This, as we know, was published in 1980 on an August bank holiday, and 260 copies were made available. The report concluded that the differences in health status were not the result of individual differences, but in the way different groups of people led their lives. It concluded these differences were the result of these social determinants of health. There were the differences in income. There were differences in the way people lived, not through choice. 2 decades later, in 1998, the government commissioned an independent inquiry into inequalities. This was the Aitchison report and resulted, as we know, in 39 recommendations. The report, despite finding a downward trend in mortality, found health inequalities still persisted, and those in the higher socioeconomic groups, the richer, having a faster decrease in mortality rates. The report recommended that the needs of pregnant women, young families, and infants should be prioritised and designed to reduce health inequalities. From Aitchison, we saw Tackling Health Inequalities, a programme for action. A programme for action recognised the value and contribution midwives have in the areas of reducing teenage pregnancy, smoking, and breastfeeding. The most recent report is a major review on health inequalities. This has been led by Professor Sir Michael Marmot. This report was published in February last year. The report found there is a gap here between rhetoric and reality, and in reality, little is changing. Marmot's report recommended 6 areas where policy should focus to reduce these health inequalities. We need to look at the healthy start for all. We need to look at education, employment, welfare programmes, and proactive prevention to address health inequalities. The report also stated the foundations of adult health are laid down before birth, in infancy, and in early childhood. Poor fetal growth is a risk for health in later life. We know, as midwives, that low birth weight is often linked to social deprivation, and it is twice as high in women from poorer backgrounds. The London Health Observatory reported in 2007, if babies born to poorer households had the same chance of surviving their first year of life as their better-off counterparts, 41 young lives would be saved in London every year. The rhetoric is that maternity services are doing better, but the reality is that we remain 23rd in an international league table of maternal mortality, just as many women are dying in pregnancy and childbirth as they were 20 years ago, leaving Britain trailing behind countries like Albania and Poland. So what is happening? In the United Kingdom today, almost 25% of births are to mothers from a non-UK origin. London has twice the proportion of births born to mothers outside England and Wales, and in some boroughs 80% of babies are born to non-English mothers. We all know that this group of women and their babies are at risk during pregnancy, and some are more likely to die. These are women who are unable to speak English, babies born to non-English speaking mothers, women who have a raised body mass index, women who are victims of domestic violence, and those that have mental health problems. In the last confidential inquiry into maternal deaths, 160 newborn babies were left without their mum. 360 children were left motherless. So at a national level, what can we do as midwives to address these inequalities in health? We need to get political. We need to start thinking differently about health and healthcare. We have to start to challenge some of the ideas regarding poverty, equity, and social justice. These are not individual issues, they are structural issues, and we have to consider policies that will reduce social exclusion. Nationally, we have guidelines now to support our clinical practice, which have been undertaken in response to the stark evidence from the National Confidential Inquiries. The latest guideline from NICE is pregnancy and complex social factors, which is focused on those young women under 20, women who misuse substances, women who experience domestic violence, and pregnant women who are recent migrants and may be unable to speak English or access services. I am sure if this was fully implemented, we would start to see a reduction in the numbers of women that potentially die and could die. At a local level, we need to continue to focus on the impact of social determinants of health and how they affect the health and well-being of the women we come into contact with. We need to ensure that when undertaking that vital health and social care assessment as part of our antenatal booking, we identify those women that are most vulnerable in our society. I know that all women need our care and support. However, we also recognise as midwives that some might need it more than others. The fact is, as midwives, we've known for a long time that women who are socially excluded will experience more problems during pregnancy. This has been supported by evidence from a succession of confidential inquiries. The facts speak for themselves. Health inequalities result from social inequalities. As midwives, we've always risen to the challenge and made major contributions in the area of public health, as we have witnessed with the success of many Sure Start schemes and initiatives. This success of the Sure Start scheme are due to your leadership and commitment as midwives. So what's the way forward now? As midwives, we enter an area, went to an age of change and uncertainty regarding the delivery of public health. This responsibility we know now will be given to local governments. If we as midwives do not make our contribution clear, we won't be heard. We have to make sure that we work in, and continue to work in partnership, not only with women we look after and obstetricians, health visitors and GPs, but with local communities and local governments and policy makers. We have to make sure that the word midwife is not omitted from any more policy documents, and we have to make clear what our contribution is. As midwives, we need to continue to be visible and accessible to women and their families and become the light that leads the way. We make an enormous contribution to public health. We work with women and their families during pregnancy and into the first few weeks of life. We provide screening, education and support for women and their families and continue to contribute to improving the health and well-being. We are based in local communities and have a real understanding of the challenges and issues they face, and we are critical at empowering women and their families to make that healthier choice in life. We help them navigate public health pathways and services, for example, smoking cessation and obesity. And because of our face-to-face engagement, we are able to identify those potential problems and make appropriate referrals. I, like many others, welcome some of the aspirations and proposals in the Public Health White Paper, especially when they seek to reduce health inequalities and empower individuals and local communities. But what we have to remember is that we can only do this if women themselves are fully aware of what is available to them, and currently they don't. It's a short-sighted government, we know, that does not invest in maternity services. An investment in maternity services and midwives will improve the health of the nation. As midwives, we have to make sure what happens in future, that a midwife is represented, that a midwife is represented at the decision-making table, and not a nurse who used to be a midwife, but somebody who is aware of the valid and vital contribution that midwives make to public health and ultimately the health of the nation. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.